Our gospel reading this morning is from Luke chapter 10. While Jesus and his disciples were traveling, Jesus entered a village where a woman named Martha welcomed him as a guest. She had a sister named Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his message. By contrast, Martha was preoccupied with getting everything ready for their meal. So Martha came to him and said, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to prepare the table all by myself? Tell her to help me." The Lord answered, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. One thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the better part. It won't be taken away from her." The word of God.
People of God.
Thanks be to God.
Thank you, Tia. Good morning, all. Good morning. Good to see you. Good to see you all. So here's my opening question this morning. What kind of a host are you? I mean, would you say you're a good host when you have friends or guests over to your home? So that anyone coming through your front door feels taken care of and chill and at home in your presence? If so, and some people really do have that gift of hosting, I would say that is your vocation, your calling in this life. And I use those words for today's message, a calling and a vocation. I'm going to use those interchangeably, and I hope you lean in and can be curious with me about what those mean in your life. So, hosting in your home. For me, I think that sometimes I'm there, and sometimes I'm not there. I can be so preoccupied when a guest is over that I'm not really fully present. I'm back in the kitchen stacking plates or dishing up dessert or wondering just when they'll leave so I can go to bed. Oh, present company excluded, of course. But there are other times when I am able to be fully present and welcoming and attentive so that the evening's laughter flows freely and the meal is good, but the food is not the main thing, because having that guest over is the main thing. And I tell you, in a moment like that, the hospitality feels as much a blessing to me as it is to my guest who's over for a visit. Can you relate to that? Let's think about Martha in today's gospel story. Martha, who gets a lousy score on Yelp for her hosting Jesus that evening at dinner. And frankly, Martha, over all the centuries that this story has been pondered by the church, has been given a rather poor grade that she does not deserve. We know that hospitality is a very big deal. It was in the biblical world. It still is in the Middle East, Middle Eastern cultures, in ways that we in the West don't even fully understand or appreciate what hospitality means. And specifically in Luke's gospel, and Luke is one of the four gospel writers, it's a very big deal to Luke. At many places, Luke is lifting up the point of how we welcome the stranger into our midst. So it's important to him as the writer, and of course it is important to Jesus in the telling of his stories and his teachings. So goes the story. When Jesus comes to the little town of Bethany, Martha shows him hospitality by welcoming Jesus into her home that she shares with her sister Mary. By the way, it's her home, which Luke makes clear in the way he tells the story. So it falls to Martha to make sure that there's food on the table. "Hey, come on in, Jesus. Make yourself comfortable. I'll be in shortly. I'm putting supper together." And then she proceeds to busy herself with the task of running her home. Need I remind us that there was no microwave ovens or gas stoves in that kitchen, so wood and water would have to be fetched. Meanwhile, her sister Mary sits at Jesus' feet, listening to his every word, we're led to believe. This is interesting. See, rather than assuming the role expected of women in her culture, she takes her place at the feet of Jesus. She assumes the position of a student sitting at the feet of a rabbi, a role that had been traditionally reserved for only men, mind you. And Jesus obviously likes the idea of Mary as a student. Hey, a woman makes as good a disciple as a man does. But this is the family where Jesus could drop in any time unannounced and flop on the sofa if he needed to. Isn't it nice to know that Jesus in his itinerant ministry, going from town to town, there were people who were his support, who he could turn to and just let his hair down and chill and sleep in late, I hope. That's what it was in the home of Martha and Mary for Jesus to come. And where there is any family, there's always a little family drama, right? Notice how this pleasant story takes a sharp turn when Martha, distracted by her many tasks, comes to Jesus and asks, and I imagine asks in a very loud and annoyed voice, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work? So tell her to help me." Classic family conflict triangle, I would call it. And Jesus' reply, trying gingerly to stay out of some of the family drama, says to her, "Martha, you're worried and distracted about so many things. When there's really need for just one thing, and Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken from her." So the problem with Martha is not that she's busy serving and providing hospitality. I mean, hey, Jesus at so many points of the gospel is lifting up that value of hospitality, of welcoming in the stranger, of making a place at the table for the one you don't yet know. Well, we need to look no further than the Good Samaritan story, which shows up just before the story of Martha and Mary in Luke's gospel today. No, the problem with Martha is not her serving, but rather that she's worried and distracted and living her vocation with no joy. Martha's not the bad guy here. For if she wasn't on task that day, there'd probably be no meal to serve to Jesus or to Mary. But I think Martha here helps us see the difference between a mere job and a real vocation. Do you have a job, paid or volunteer? Or do you live a vocation, paid or volunteer? That's what I'd like us to lean into and wonder about. What's the vocation in your life, friends? Being clear about this vocation business could just change your life or make it quite meaningful. The writer David Brooks says, "The thing everybody knows about finding a vocation is that it's quite different from finding a career. When you have a career mentality, the frontal cortex of your brain here is very much in charge. You take an inventory of what you're good at, of your talents. You ask, what could I market in myself to get ahead in the world? But in the vocation mentality, you're not just living at this ego level of your consciousness. You know, I'll work because the job pays well or makes my life convenient. No. When you're thinking vocation, you're striking at something deeper, something of the very substrate of what makes life worth living. Some activity or some injustice has called to the deepest part of your nature and demands an active response for which you do have something to contribute when you think about it. You know, for some of us, vocation and career can show up in the same job. And how nice that is. But it's not always the case, and it doesn't really have to be the case. One of you told me this week that your vocation might be that thing you would labor at gladly, whether you were paid for it or not. I like that. Retirees in the house, how are you doing with your vocation? Are there elements in your life that you gladly get up and labor for, and it has nothing to do with financial compensation? I hope so. The writer Fred Schmidt says that the key to discovering my vocation lies in asking, what comes natural to me? What am I drawn to? What do I find myself talking about over and over, or reading up on over the long haul? Am I a healer, a problem solver, a nurturer? Am I a prophet, a truth teller? Am I a detail person? The answer to that question often lies in patterns that were established early in our life. That's something exciting about considering vocation. What did we find we cared about earlier in our life that has had a way of continuing to show up in relationships or in causes that we align ourselves with? There are times when the gifts that show up in us that we could live out a vocation through, sometimes we discover it ourselves, but you know what I notice more often, and this is why we need community, it's more often other people who notice it first in us, that there's a proclivity to care about something. See, jobs are not always the best vehicle of vocation. Most jobs will help you find your life vocation, but just up to a point. Even the best of jobs include some tasks that don't really match up to what your life purpose could be. There are other times when our vocations are worked out elsewhere and our job just pays the bills. But there are other occasions when our day job is the very thing that makes our vocation possible. Once we clock out, we can go do that thing that we really care about. I think we do well to not focus on jobs as the main key to life's significance. Think about it. Most of us spend 18 to 21 years getting ready for a career path. We get a job that isn't maybe the exact same thing that we had planned to do, but we find ourselves there. We got hired, and there we are. Our employment gets punctuated over the life of our career by maybe layoffs, illnesses, in-office squabbling, discrimination, the ups and downs of work life. Then we retire. And if everything goes well, we may live another 20 or 30 years. So why build your life's meaning around something as tenuous as a job or a title? We can learn a lot from retired folks when it comes to claiming our vocation. And really, I mean it. As someone at this point in my career path, I take notes from some of you all in retirement who have found a way to have a grounding and a rhythm to your life that doesn't have to do with a paid role. It's a good thing that some of us learn from you. I say, look for the vocation that is deeply rooted in your life and has likely been there for a long time. Your way of being that expresses God's calling on you. Even if you don't put religious language to it, there may be a calling in you that God is dreaming for you to live out that really does advance the common good, whether you've seen it that way or not. So that whatever happens, whether you're employed or not, you are still God's gift to the world in the making. No job can give you that. And really, no job can take that away when you know your sense of vocation. Whether you're a student or just starting your career or retired, whether you're able-bodied or homebound, what I'm saying today I think is true. We can express our vocation, our calling, our inner gifts, wherever we are. I enjoyed calling out Margaret Knapp in the first service. Because I've been struck by her as an elder in our midst. She calls people to wish them happy birthday. And I saw her after worship. I said, Margaret, how many people do you call over a year to say happy birthday? She said, hundreds. And I really mean, that is a calling for her that adds meaning to other people's lives. So this talk of vocation stretching all across our lives, the arc of our lives, it has me remembering my own story. How when I was in high school, I began to notice friends coming to me and wanting me to listen to their story or their problems. I sometimes offer advice, but as often not. Just listen. I tried to listen well. And something I began to discover about people. Do you know people can be listened into the solutions of their own problems? If they're listened to well. So that was in high school. In my early 20s, when I tended bar at a restaurant, I again noticed how my spirit would kind of stand alert when a guest needed someone to listen to their story. Later on, I had a part-time job during seminary in Boston, and I had a night security job. I was a security guard, if you will, at a warehouse where rock bands came and rehearsed late into the night. I'll tell you about that on another time. But what I would say to you is even in that role as a security guard, I felt alive when in deep conversations and listening to somebody who happened through the office as they peeled back the layers of this story to get to the heart of the matter of what they were working on in their life. So now I get to be a pastor. And certainly my role is in part having to do with listening and sometimes offering a few words of advice when called for. But you know what I think? I think that this vocation in me of being a sounding board, trying to listen to people, I think it has been and it will be my calling, even after I retire, to find some place where I can be of use in that next chapter of my life. Can you relate to that? I bet you can, as all of us have vocations and callings inside of us, stirred up in every one of us by God's Spirit to somehow benefit the common good. These are callings, brothers and sisters, that we're to pay attention to because they are so much bigger and larger and life-changing than our mere jobs along the way. I think some of us have lost our sense of vocation. Or maybe we never knew it, which is okay. For if it's our vocation, it will come back before us over and over again. We'll have a chance to catch the wind of it again. So if you need help reawakening your soul so you can remember your vocation and calling in this life, then I believe, again, that the writer David Brooks has a line of advice that I think is beneficial to you and me this morning, as he says, if you really want to make a wise vocation decision, you have to lead the kind of life that keeps your heart and soul awake. There are some activities that cover up our heart and soul and mask our truest desires. Things that we do that are just too analytical or purely economic or cut and dry professional or comfortably bourgeois. Yet there are some actions that we can do that actually awaken the heart. And they stir the soul to be awake. Things like music and drama and art and friendship and spending time around children and nature. And this might surprise you, spending time around injustice. Because injustice is the place where we get stirred up in our bones, knowing that the world could be better. And just maybe I'm being convicted to step forward and contribute in some way to a solution. Are you angry lately with the treatment of migrants, or the fear-mongering speech coming from national leaders, well, don't ignore that anger. It might be trying to awaken your vocation to show up in body and soul, and so that you, in some small way, could be part of a solution that's life-giving for somebody. See, the people who make the best decisions to live in alignment with their vocation are the people who are living their deeper desires, not our counterfeit, shallower desires that keep us fat and content and shielded from the deeper desires where we actually do encounter God and our neighbor in the most authentic ways. No, the people doing this kind of work get out of their boring offices. They show up where the problems are. I've watched some of you in this church over my 10 years of getting to know and love you. I've watched you in this church discover your vocation and calling, some of you. And for Pastor Dallin, there is nothing more fulfilling as a spiritual leader to see someone find this niche and pour themselves into it. And you often have taught me that your call had absolutely nothing to do with receiving a paycheck. I've seen some of you laboring for clean water in developing countries, or swinging a hammer for a family who really needs an affordable house, or living your vocation of hospitality by helping this church rethink what it means to be welcoming to all straight and gay seekers alike. So a great question to ask is, what happens in us? What happens in us on our way to discovering what our calling is, our vocation, our God-given vocation? Well, you know, sometimes it has to do with, where do you find glee? Where do you find that you're just happy to labor on something? Whether it's a menial task, you know, you walk through the downstairs fellowship hall as we're feeding our friends on a given morning. I see people washing dishes in the dish room, cutting up and laughing and finding meaning in the dish room, washing dishes. That stirs me. It amazes me. Sometimes it's glee. Where do you feel happy? Sometimes it's tragedy. What brokenness have you seen that scarred you, that shook you up on the way to waking you up? Sometimes what's happening in you on the way to discovering your calling and vocation is a problem that just burns at your conscience, causes you to lose a little bit of sleep because it's just wrong, and you must be a part of a solution if you're going to move forward. Oh, millions of people have found their vocation in fighting meanness and bias and racism and sexism and the other woes of our world. You know, before I go, I would like to introduce you to someone, Fred Swanaker from Ghana in Africa. Something you need to know about Fred Swanaker is he showed some great leadership potential even as a boy. His parents, his father was a magistrate and a lawyer, had a good influence on his son, but the father died when Fred Swanaker was in his teens. Soon after that, his mother opened up a boarding school in Botswana, and she only had 5 students that first year starting. And she turned to her son Fred and said, "You're going to be the headmaster." Need I say that sometimes it is a mother in our life who awakens us to a vocational call. So after high school, Fred, still showing great leadership gifts, he won a scholarship that brought him here to the States. He did well. He landed a job. He went to a Stanford business school. Things were looking good for him living out there in California. But he was haunted and bothered by the fact that he'd been given these great breaks for him to get some training and a career that he knew that millions of other bright Africans were not receiving the same breaks that he'd gotten. So he thought about returning to Africa and opening a chain of healthcare clinics. but at a crucial moment in his life, of him figuring out his vocational call, he came to the conclusion that the biggest impediment in the continent of Africa for them moving ahead was the lack of a well-trained leadership class who could parlay across cultures. So he raised some money. He had friends in Silicon Valley, and raised some money, went back to South Africa to launch what came to be known as the African Leadership Academy, ALA. With this goal, get this, his goal was to train 6,000 leaders over the next 50 years. Now that's a vocational call that'll keep you going through your life. ALA now takes some of the most talented students from across the continent, offers them free education, and sends them to universities abroad so long as they have agreed to come back to Africa to live out their vocations, their lives, their careers, and to lift other people up along the way. This Fred Swanaker, who figured out his vocation, he was nominated to receive the prestigious Echoing Green Fellowship Award that are given to leaders who are changing the world. And he was asked in an interview as he was receiving the fellowship, what was your moment of obligation, sir? What was your moment of obligation? The moment when you realized you had to think larger than a mere job so that you could pursue your calling in life. This is really important. Swanaker believes we all are defined by these moments of obligation. Not the kind of obligation where you show up out of guilt to do something, no. But the kind of obligation when you know you must do something, which is usually caused by a sense of outrage at seeing some injustice or wrong or unfairness that is going on in society. This is the beginning of vocation for many people. When we're willing to work on some big, gnarly problem that may not come to an end during our lifetime, but we're still called to work on it. Things such as befriending those who are addicted, or advocating for common sense gun control, or visiting the prisoner, or choosing to raise up the dignity of a migrant family at our border. So to test the tug in your heart, I get a lot of tugs in my heart. How about you? To test the tug in your heart, when you see a problem and you wonder, is this the place where I could find my vocation and really invest my time and talents? Ask yourself any of these three questions. Ask yourself, is this problem big enough? Is it a real difference maker for people? Or is it just some petty problem? Two, am I uniquely positioned to do something to help? By the fact of people I know, or my realm of influence, or my sense of privilege, could I make a difference if I stepped in? And three, am I truly passionate about this issue? Does it touch into something that I've seen in other parts of my life that resonates with me? Would it get me out of bed in the morning because I see that it's that important? See, these questions, they're questions of discernment when it comes to vocation, and they're really good questions for all of us to always ponder. Someone said to me after the first service, you know, I'm still seeking my vocation. And I think that's a faithful position. We're not ever done. The story keeps unfolding of us searching for meaningful vocation. So let me close by circling back to Martha, who we started with a few minutes ago. You know, I think Martha knew her vocation. She just had lost sight of it for a moment through her distractions and her multitasking, the great enemies of vocation. It's really no different than for you and me. Some of us here maybe have forgotten our vocation. That deeper need to serve others that God's Spirit seems to make us aware of and seems to be waiting for us to make a response. So I say to Martha and to you and to me, let's not ever quit seeking out and experiencing our vocation in this life, which is part of God's dream for us after all, which is so much larger than a mere job or title or position we pick up along. So friends, let's go into this new week with a little bit of curiosity, wondering, am I paying attention to vocational call? Go in the power of a blessing that has shown up to me a few times lately that I'm going to leave you with. It comes out of the great Irish poet John Donohue when he says, take the courage to live the life that you would love, to postpone your dream no longer, but to do the things that you came here for, and to waste your heart on fear no more. Amen.
Amen.